What is it like for you, Brad and Jane, to get well acquainted with these gentlemen who actually flew this airplane in combat?
Well, I have my box of tissues down here because this always tears me up, but they're why we do it. Once we got the plane, once we sobered up and got the plane and we started to meet the veterans, that was what it was all about. The history, their stories, their bravery, what they did for our country. And they are coming to us and thanking us for flying this and bringing it out to the public to see. And we're like, it's all because of you that we are able to do this. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here for this. So we truly appreciate it.
When did you get interested in naval aviation and looking back at the history from the war?
About the same time we purchased the plane. I was not a history buff beforehand. My parents are significantly older. My dad was in World War II right at the end. Never left the States. Didn't really have any stories as such to share except his friends and the camaraderie. But after getting the plane, you kind of get totally immersed in it.
Yeah. Brad, when did you really start to get involved?
Similar to Jane, the airplane started out for me as Brad's big, powerful toy. And very quickly, our role changed to caretakers of the piece of history.
Yeah. Tell me more about this airplane and what it's like to fly.
I guess the first word is heavy. It's as heavy and cumbersome to fly as it looks like it might be. Very heavy on the controls, very stable.
But that goes to what the guys were just saying about how you could shoot it up, it could take a lot of punishment.
The airplane is very well built. We maintain it all the time, and it is a heavily built, sturdy airplane.
Yeah. How do you use this airplane? How often do you fly it? Where do you fly it?
We put 100 hours a year on it, so we fly ours quite a bit, almost always to air shows or flyovers, kickoff parades, stuff like that.
Funerals,
we've had the privilege of doing some TBM veteran funerals.
Flyovers,
yep.
At funerals. And Jane, how comfortable are you flying? Was it flying new to you? Did Brad introduce you with his fabulous toy to aviation?
Brad, I don't even remember him telling me before we got married that he wanted to learn to fly. And when Brad says he's going to do something, he does it. So he got his pilot's license, I think, back in like 91, and very comfortable with him. He's very mechanically inclined, so he's not just a fly-by-the-numbers pilot. He understands what's going on in the engine. So when we've had issues, he's very comfortable to ride with because he's like, he'll kind of tense up a little bit and start fidgeting with something, but he's like, it'll be okay. We can do this. And he's thinking about what's going on and what he needs to do to correct it. So he's very comfortable to fly with. This thing is a joy to ride in, except for long distances. It's a smooth ride. It's loud, but you get to see a lot. It's just a pleasure to own it.
Yeah. Brad, tell me a little more about the mission of this airplane. We heard a little bit of it from the guys, but how were they used most in the Pacific?
Well, like I said, it was built around the Mark 13 torpedo. You know, the specifications were to be a torpedo bomber. The torpedoes were not very accurate. I tell people all the time this was a lot of hardware to carry one torpedo that was probably going to miss.
Wow.
So then they used them for support of the island invasions. Something interesting is this airplane was never really replaced, upgraded during the war. From the time this one came into use, they were still using this one at the end. It was a very successful plane.
And earlier, am I correct that it was its first combat was at Midway?
Yes, it was. Fairly unsuccessfully.
Ah. How so? What happened that day? We know what happened at Midway, but
as far as the TBMs go, none of them returned. One was able to make a crash landing on Midway itself, but none of them came back to the ship.
So how did they? What lessons were learned from that?
Fighter cover. You needed fighter cover.
to protect them when they're doing torpedoes.
And they changed the tactics as the war progressed to make the planes less vulnerable during torpedo runs and bombing runs.
Right. One of the guys mentioned strafing. How much strafing was done by this airplane if it wasn't dropping torpedoes?
I guess another good question for them. Lots of stories, you know, we've heard from strafing and shooting sharks when they were bored. And actually, another non-military use for this airplane that we've heard on several occasions was because you could carry a big load in it and it would go high, they would stack it with beer, go up to 20,000 feet where it was cold, and cool all the beer off and come back down to the carrier.
See, it's interesting how often the subject of alcohol gets involved with aviation. You wouldn't have had this airplane.
That's right.
If you hadn't had that last beer. That's great. Gentlemen, back to you. Do you still have a mic over there? Kyle, thank you. Would one of you who can talk about strafing missions and what those strafing missions were like? What did you accomplish with them?
Well, you tried not to miss the water. But,
I think what he just said, they tried not to miss the water when they're strafing.
No, it was targets of opportunity is what it amounted to. I mean, after the plane was lined up to make its bomb run, can't speak for others, but my pilot always gave me the opportunity to strafe gun positions on the island. Or if there were ships in a harbor that we were flying over to strafe those. It was just targets of opportunity that we could use.
To what extent, when you're in the turret, to what extent could you shoot down? You know, your angle... the angles that you have where you could shoot down.
We had a gun interrupter on the guns so that you couldn't hit any part of your aircraft. But shooting directly down, you'd have to shoot just after your wing. I'm guessing maybe 30 degrees.
Right. But you did have that capability to shoot at something on the ground.
Oh, yes, and if the pilot cooperated, well, I shouldn't say cooperated, gave you the opportunity, he could drop the wing, whichever you wanted. He could drop the wing, and that's right, and give you a wider field of fire.
A wider field. So that meant you had to be well coordinated with your pilot. You had to be on the same page every second.
Well, yeah, that's true, too. Well, all three of us. I mean, it was a cooperation thing. And we each knew what the other was going to do, and so you didn't butt in, so to speak. Each one did the job, and each one did it.
Right. Do any of the rest of you have strafing stories to share that you recall?
I got one. The pilot was strafing with his wing guns, and as we pulled out, some of the bullets were ricocheting off of the water. Did you ever have that happen?
Yeah.
I said, hey, you trying to shoot us down or what? That was it, yeah. Yeah, but he was a good guy, really. But little things like that happen, you just can't control them.
No, you can't.
You know, I was talking to Brad a moment ago about the lessons learned from Midway when none of the Avengers got back with their crews at Midway. You know, what was done differently for you guys that your planes were better protected than the Avengers were at the Battle of Midway?
For number one, we had more cooperation of fighters, and the congregation of TBMs, I mean of your squadron, finishing a bomb run to form up as soon as possible so you had a concentration of guns. But I would have to say that I would give all the credit to the F-6s that covered us. We had always had high cover and low cover. And so no matter where we went, we had cover. We had we had one Jap plane make a run on us, and before you could do anything at all, two F-6s came down and decided to get rid of him. So we appreciated that kind of cover.
Yeah. How did any of you experience successful torpedo drops and where you had hits on ships with your torpedoes?
Yes, I had a successful drop.
Kyle.
And the torpedo landed and jumped up out of the water, but then landed back in and went right after the ship. And so we got one direct hit on the ship.
Could one torpedo bring a ship, sink a ship?
Well, if it hit in the right spot, yeah.
Any other successful torpedo drops that you recall, General Jack? Yeah.
Yes, we had one successful drop.
And
we hit a cruiser. Although we were after just any plane, and it turned out that the one that we were after was just a destroyer. So we just kept going until we found the aircraft carrier.
Bigger game.
Yes, very much
bigger
so.
Game. Jack, same question about successful torpedo drops.
Yeah, at Palau, we had our squadron of six aircraft made a run on a Japanese destroyer. We had been following it from an oil slick, and we made the so-called, I say we, it was the six of us, the flight, made the traditional torpedo run. Three aircraft coming from each side. When we dropped, our torpedo never hit the ship. It was sunk by that time. It was we figured about 8 seconds, and it disappeared.
But you couldn't take credit for it?
No, we couldn't really take credit for it because we were all dropping at about the same time.